Welcome to Let's Finally Watch This, a podcast for casual movie fans who have always meant to watch classic movies. I'm your host, Nick Hayden.
And I'm your other host, Timothy Deal.
And we're back for season three. A little rusty, at least I am, for some reason.
Hey, it's been several months, and we didn't even know for sure for a while if we were going to do a season this year.
So we're doing a season, but a little different.
That's right. You may remember at the end of last season, we talked about how we're kind of taking a podcasting hiatus for this year for the most part.
So our mothership is on hiatus.
Yes.
Indefinitely.
Your old trains of thought. But we're like, we have a lot of fun doing this. So came up with basically a compromise. This is going to be sort of an abbreviated or abridged or abbreviated season of Let's Finally Watch This.
Too long didn't watch. Not quite that.
We will have actually watched these. And it'll still be 12 episodes. We're still going to keep with our format because we got kind of a rhythm going.
Yeah, going through the decades. It's kind of nice to see the progression, but we're going to keep it shorter.
Yeah.
And a lot less, I guess, research will save you a lot of time.
True. And we'll probably expect fewer music clips, fewer sound clips from the different movies from the sound era. Again, these will be sort of more cliff notes than we've done before.
But it's down to the essentials of what we like to do, which is basically, here's a classic movie. We've not watched it. Is it worth watching and why?
Yeah, so hopefully this is a nice compromise. Again, it may not be as full of a season as last two seasons are, but at least it's better than nothing.
And hopefully it'll give you some new movies that you need to watch.
That's true. Potentially after this, who knows? Maybe we'll go back to a full-size season. But for now, this is what we're doing.
So Tim, what is our movie this time?
We are going back to 1904, and our movie is The Impossible Voyage.
By
George Méliès.
Who we had on the first season
for our test episode about a trip to the moon.
So he likes journeys.
He does. And this is sort of a sequel of sorts, a spiritual sequel, it feels like.
I mean, he did make like hundreds of films, so.
Yeah. And we'll talk a little bit more about that in just a sec. But should we quickly touch on what was going on in film in 1904? Yes. Again, for these history sections, we're not going to go in real deep, but if you want to hear more, here are our episode that started off last season. I think that would be episode 11, where we talked about 1903. This is an era where film is pretty much still in its infancy, and filmmakers are exploring new techniques, mm-hmm. all this kind of stuff.
The silent, obviously.
All black silent film.
Black and white, generally.
Yeah, there are some hand-painted, like this. In this case, they would actually go through and paint each frame by hand.
Yep.
So yes, got some color, and that just happens to be how this movie is widely available. But yes, very short films at this point. We haven't gotten to feature films. And America is not necessarily the epicenter of world film or the filmmaking industry.
No, but we watched one last season.
The Great Train Robbery?
The Great Train Robbery.
Which was an American film.
But most of them, well, at least Méliès is one of the main players at this point, and he's French.
That's right. I think there was a statistic we looked at last time that like in 1910, the majority of films that were being shown in America were from France. Mm-hmm. So very different time period, so that's where this comes in. Just a couple quick facts that the Wikipedia article on 1904 and film notes. It says, as shown in the film series Westinghouse Works, some filmmakers begin to move away from eye-level filmmaking and use the camera to explore spaces from an angle usually inaccessible to the average person. So probably
interesting.
Low-angle shots, high-angle shots.
Bird-eye view sort of thing.
As opposed to most of films from this era, which are kind of stage play.
Kind of stagey.
Yeah. William Fox purchases his first Nickelodeon this year. William Fox would go on to create the company that became 20th Century Fox.
Makes sense, yeah.
And then on June 23rd of this year, Marcus Lowe founds the theater chain, the People's Vaudeville Company, which later was renamed Lowe's Theaters, which was the oldest theater chain operating in North America when it was merged with AMC Theaters in 2006.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, so way later. Okay. So again, we still got the kind of foundations of the early film producers, film businessmen, again, very first setting things up.
Can you give us a quick thumbnail sketch of Méliès as well?
Méliès, yes. Let's talk about him real quick. He was a former magician who found his way into filmmaking, and he's known for these very elaborate, imaginative works, such as A Trip to the Moon. And this film, let's move on to The Impossible Voyage. We come to him in 1904, kind of at his pinnacle.
Okay.
A Trip to the Moon was 1902, we talked about. We skipped over The Kingdom of the Fairies.
And several other 100 others.
Yes, several. those two, and then this one, are kind of considered his
top three.
His
right?
top three, yeah. The most out of like 500 some films he made. Yeah. And so he would have been making other films here in these intervening years. but we're just focusing on the big ones. And this one in particular is on the longer end. It's 20 minutes. Mm-hmm. It's longer than A Trip to the Moon by about 8 minutes or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But yes, inspired by a Jules Verne play.
Loosely inspired.
Very, yeah, loosely. It's mostly...
As in travel.
Yeah. In case you're wondering, the French version of the name is Le Voyage à travers l'impossible, or something like that.
Sounds good to me. So our gimmick here, I guess, our shtick, is that the movie discussion after we do all the intro stuff is 12 minutes.
12 minutes because I guess we're doing 12 episodes and it's a unique.
And after that, we disappear, our glass slippers go away, all that stuff.
I propose that we wait to give our final verdict till after the movie discussion. So,
okay.
So the beginning and the ending of this will be outside of our time limit.
Okay, sounds good.
Okay, are you ready?
I'm ready as I'm going to get.
Okay, our talk begins now. So this movie is, like I said, kind of a spiritual sequel to A Trip to the Moon. It's basically, it's about a group of people that go this time up to the sun, land on it. It's too hot, so they chill out in a freezer.
In a freezer, but then they literally freeze, and so they have to start a fire on the sun.
Yeah.
Their understanding of space is a little wonky at this point, because then they fall off the sun in a submarine.
Yeah, they fall off, and they land in Earth's ocean, and they explore in a submarine.
We
for
missed
a
when
while.
They ran into like the building.
Well, that's true. They had
a hospital.
They had a test version of their... the way they got to the moon is they took a train, rode a train up a mountain, and it launched them off into space, basically. But their first try of this, they just fell off a mountain, and they all wound up in the hospital.
A couple things I really like. One, just the energy. Well, getting Trip to the Moon had a lot of this energy, but I feel like it's almost more directed or... I don't know, I feel like it's a little easier to understand in some ways. Because not, you
this
know what, you
this
know
one
what,
or last one? Easier.
I think this one.
You think this is an easier... Okay.
Well, partly just because the beginning of A Trip to the Moon, it's like, it feels forever with just the old men, like, arguing.
Sure. Uh-huh.
This one, it gets going a little quicker.
Okay, I can see that.
And then you don't know exactly what's going on from our point of view. We read a synopsis, which is kind of great.
Yeah, because on Wikipedia, their plot summary, the names are taken from the English description of the film published by Méliès, and they're probably for pamphlets. And I'm guessing, I know some silent films, they would have someone reading kind of details and names, because there's no on-screen titles on this. But like the group that does it, they look like a bunch of tourists, sort of, but they're apparently the Institute of Incoherent Geography.
And they give you a sense of the sort of style, too. It's manic. I mean, it's very cartoonish. It's the sort of thing that I could still see in like some sort of Looney Tunes cartoon, but it's live action. Well, you say that about Marx Brothers, that they were like live action cartoons.
Sure, sure.
And it seems like this had some of that same frantic energy.
Yeah, well, like in one of the scenes when they're testing their first train, they go through someone's house.
Yeah.
And it's just completely ridiculous. They're in and out. It adds nothing to the plot except just it's funny.
It's funny. Yeah, they're all eating supper and there's a million people in the house. And...
This one I would say is much more comedic than A Trip to the Moon was. You've got people pratfalling all over the place.
Because Trip to the Moon, some people read it as almost satire.
Yeah.
In my remembrance.
And I saw one critic quoted on Wikipedia that kind of saw some of that same, like, poking fun at the aristocrats. Like, these are all rich people doing this, and they're all...
I get that, but that's just
causing
sort of
havoc. But it's
comedy in general, too.
Yeah, it's true. It's even less of a focus in this one than it was in A Trip to the Moon.
And the sets were very, very intricate. I mean, the Trip to the Moon were as well, but it just seemed like there was a lot of times we were like, is that real? Is that paper? Is that, like, just things moving?
There's one of the scenes where they're showing the construction of things, and there are certain props. It's like, I'm not sure if that's a cutout or what I'm looking at here.
Yeah.
It's like, because certain things you know is like, okay, they're pushing this thing in front.
Yeah.
That's a screen of some sort. But like, it's all very well designed. And just the variety of them than this one. Again, this movie is longer, but it seems like there are even way more sets and locations.
There was a lot of sets. I mean, I can't imagine how much time it took to make all this stuff. I mean, it reminded me of something like Terry Gilliam would come up with nowadays, just like just moving pieces, like Rube Goldberg's sort of feel to it.
Like there was a couple of, I think there was the one shot of, looks like a cutaway of them in the train car, just sitting in there, and you can see it looks like they've taken off one wall so you can see what's inside. And that shot is not super long, someone designed that whole thing for like, I don't know, 10 seconds of film?
Yeah, I mean, it's set up like a stage still, but it's like a really fancy play, like Broadway level, like we're going to do Lion King with puppet sort of thing.
Yeah.
So I don't know. It was entertaining. It was just one thing to another. I mean, you got to suspend all disbelief.
Yeah.
Completely. But there's this sort of unreality to it in a good way.
Yeah. Didn't you say it kind of reminded you of like old animation in that sense?
Yeah.
And I can see that like a lot of Felix the Cat kind of stuff is like, there's not a whole lot in terms of plot, but it's just more like the cartoons doing things that normal people can't do.
And, you know, you get frozen, you're on the sun, you start a fire, things blow up, you know, there's octopus outside the submarine. I mean, like, everything's just one more over-the-top thing.
Uh-huh.
I feel like we watched a color-shaded one, mm-hmm. and I feel like that added to the sort of the fever dream-like quality of it.
Because it's not realistic colors. Everything's kind of pastel-ish.
Yeah.
And all the smoke bombs are orangish. And yeah.
I remember thinking, watching, like, I wonder if anyone could do something that style now, or it just, everything's too set up in a certain way that you couldn't do something like that anymore.
Yeah, I don't know that you can achieve the same sort of style. It's one of those things, like, again, back in the day, it's hilarious because, like, people know they wouldn't have gotten caught up in like, well, that's not realistic. Yeah. It's just like, oh, wow, that's really funny. That's so zany. And like they went through someone's house. Not like, oh, my word, the car went through these poor people's house. Like I guess the thing is like when some of this stuff is new, it's novel and creative. Yep. And then like when it's been done more times, like, well, yeah that's the weird world we live in.
Yeah. It hits very much a kid logic.
Yeah.
You know, to it.
Yeah.
Like, of course, you go in the sun, you can just sit there and then, you know.
That sequence, I kept thinking of an episode of Phineas and Ferb where Dr. Doofenshmirtz is talking about one of his mad scientist friends who wanted to set fire to the sun. And I told him, you really need it. That's ridiculous. You really need to give up on it. But he just couldn't let it go.
Exactly. Just why not land on the sun back, you know, and you just fly around, you fall off the sun of the ocean and just, why not?
You keep going and
you just keep going.
Yeah. I fear that sort of thing, unless it was just made, maybe you could do it in an actual cartoon. That might be the only medium that it could actually work in.
Yeah. People will expect you to suspend belief, but everyone has, it's so much real, like, that's no, you know, comic book guy.
Yeah. Too much. Our world is becoming a little bit more cynical, that it feels like, at least to us, than it did in 1904.
Both Jules Verne, which it does, I mean, as far as I know, not really Jules Verne, but it had that sense of like the endless possibilities. I mean, you know, Jules Verne, you could go to Middle Earth and find a land. You go to the moon and see stuff. Like, there's just there's possibilities, and it feels like that.
It does. It does. It does feel like Jules Verne without actually being Jules Verne. You know, I did look it up because I was wondering, what was that movie from the 1960s, The Fantastic Voyage? Is that related to all of this? It's not. That was an original new idea that they asked Asimov to write a novelization of.
Okay, makes sense, yeah.
So it's very sci-fi, and it feels like like Jules Verne, but not Jules Verne.
Yeah.
So,
because, I mean, good Jules Verne, he's sort of fanciful, but he also has science behind it.
Yeah.
It's science fiction.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
We were doing quite fine. We knew for this film we wouldn't have a whole lot to talk about.
I mean, we're talking almost half the length of the movie.
Yes. Yeah, so we don't have to hit our full time if we are out of things to say.
Well, tell me one thing that you think was, why do you think this one's one of his top three?
Oh, I mean, I haven't compared him to the other one, so it'd be a little hard to say. Just on a guess, just the scope of the thing. I remember one of the things from Hugo, which is a Martin Scorsese movie that's about, in part, Georges Méliès and his creative vision and stuff, was just the grandeur and the, like, I want to say opulence, which that he painted his pictures.
Think about that. The film is relatively new, and he's like, I'm going to do this. I'm going to make you believe I'm going to the sun and the ocean. Like, he found the medium. He's like, let's have an adventure with it.
Yeah, yeah.
I think it's a good thing to start off our season with him, just because one of the draws of cinema all this time has been the adventure, the you can go places you can't go otherwise.
That's true. And, you know, you could say that this is him repeating himself a little bit too much, but I think he's self-aware how he's repeating it.
Mm-hmm.
One critic on Wikipedia pointed out that the angle of everything is kind of flipped from Trip to the Moon. Like, in Trip to the Moon, the rocket is going from left to right. Here, it's going from right to left. And this one also has a picture of a big person in, like, you know, Trip to the Moon had the man on the moon. This one has the sun has a big face.
Yeah.
But instead of going inside its eye, they go inside its mouth.
Well, it's one of these things, you're making hundreds of films. Like, you're kind of just honing your theme and variation.
Sure. And I guess you are learning things, like you said, like the beginning, the Trip to the Moon had way too much time with the wizards just talking about nonsense. Here they jump to the action quick, a lot
like
faster.
You get a sense like, okay, we're going somewhere. There's a journey, and then they load up, and it sets up the pratfall, the vaudeville aspects of it pretty quick.
Yeah, that's true. So yeah, it is an interesting variation because it has some similar beats, but then it does completely different things with them.
Yeah, it just rhymes with it.
Yeah, yeah. And there's no dream sequence. There's no evil force that's living on the sun.
And I guess really plot-wise, the plot is more the journey than saying anything. Like, Journey to the Moon kind of has a beginning, middle, end in some ways. This is just like new transportations.
Yeah.
It reminds me a little bit of Around the World in 80 Days, except that try to use all the different transportations of the time. But these are all like the fanciful ones. Like,
yeah.
How many submarines were running around in 1904?
Probably not. I mean, it was around, I guess, because there was that one submarine that was used in the Civil War briefly.
Yeah.
So it wasn't a novel idea. But yeah, it's not...
Not super new.
Not every day. Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, so it's a very fanciful in a good way movie, I believe.
Yes, I would concur.
Right.
Well, we've got about a minute left, so we might as well just go ahead and wrap this up.
Okay. So, Tim, what do you think is our verdict for this movie?
I would say I would recommend it. If you're into Jules Verne, if you saw Hugo and you want to know more about him, this is a perfect one to experience. Again, it's not a necessary one. When I was looking through films in 1904, we didn't have any other nominations for this year because nothing else stood out. And I was like, okay, I recognize that title.
Yeah.
Even though Georges Méliès did other films, this is the one that stood out in my memory. And it was a lot of fun. And it's readily available on YouTube. It's public domain.
And it's only 20 minutes, so you might as well. And
yeah.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. So I'll agree with you.
You agree with me. Cool. Well, there is our first episode of the season, Nick.
We ran through it. So next episode will be in 1914, and we will be watching...
Cabaria. So we talked briefly about Cabaria last season. It's a epic made by Giovanni Pastrone, if I remember that correctly. If not, I'll check this out. and it is considered the first film epic. And I think film historians are glad to give it that instead of The Birth of a Nation, which was done the following year in America. But this one came first, and it will be a new experience for both of us.
Yes. Very different than our last year's 1913 film.
Yes, which is a very short comedy. This one, I think, is going to be much more dramatic.
Yes. All right. That's our episode 23.
That's right.
And we will see you next time. This has been Nick.
And this is Tim.
Adios.
Bye-bye.